Congratulations, you've been chosen to teach summer school.
We can't learn our ways.
Oh, I'm not a real teacher.
I have had it with this school, Skinner.
That's all right. These aren't real students, though.
Hello and welcome to a very, and we mean very, special episode of the Dune Minute Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we're here today with one of the incredible folks who's made their mark on the universe we all know and love. He's a talented member of music teams coming from many of your favorite TV and movie franchises, including, but not limited to, Dune, James Bond, Kung Fu Panda, Top Gun, Blade Runner, The Crown, X-Men, Terminator, the DC Universe, Spider-Man, Dunkirk, and Interstellar, Mr. Raul Vega. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm really stoked to be here. Wow, I've never heard them rattled off like that before. So I'm like, were those all the projects? Wow, that's a lot, yeah.
Ben diving into your IMDb page.
Oh, great.
Since you and I first started talking, months ago on Blue Sky.
Good. I'm glad I've been cross-referenced and all that stuff. Is this guy really who he says he is, you know?
No, we were honestly just really surprised to, first of all, you know, meet you online and everything and come across you on our page and kind of get to, you know, have some chats with you both on and offline and stuff and, you know, get prepared for this. So it's something we've been looking forward to as we've been doing our recordings over the last couple months. And since we're wrapping up our summer school series now, getting ready to go into Dune Part 2.
Yeah.
We figured this would be a good time to have a conversation.
Great. Yeah, no, it's really cool. Yeah, I've been kind of enjoying the whole Blue Sky platform. I think, you know, a lot of us migrated there for various reasons. Yeah. And we don't need to get into that. But I was trying to mess, like, how do we connect with people? And I was like, well, let me look at some stuff, what people are kind of talking about. You guys popped up, and I thought it was a really interesting concept for a show that literally nobody else is doing. So very cool. Yeah.
Well, we can't take full credit in being the only ones. In fact, we got the idea from another series that has done all of this with all of the Star Wars movies. Mm. We can't commit to a million films, but we can do two.
Right, there you go. So, well, if there's going to be two films, these give you more than enough to chew on, right?
Yeah. Well, in case you can't tell, we're big fans of Dune and big Dune nerds.
Yeah, great.
Before we dive into your background and what you do on the music team, first question we have for all of our guests is, what got you into Dune?
I feel like I can't even talk about that without talking about what I do. sure. I mean, honestly, it was, you know, my boss, my mentor, my friend, Hans Zimmer, who's the renowned composer for this score, who I've been working with for a very long time, and he's been talking about this book for he'll always find a way to bring it up in some sort of a conversation, and he always mentioned, you know, there's always times where he'd say fear is the mind killer, and I never read the book, so I never really understood what that meant. And then once we had gotten the project and it was, you know, we were really internalized about it, I'm like, oh, okay. And you know, it really was his passion for it that got all of us really excited about it. You know, we've worked on a lot of projects at that studio, and you know, every single one of them presents their own challenges, and they're always a lot of fun. But this one was so close to his heart that he made sure that we, you know, before we even started, before he even wrote a note or we had our first real meeting, he said, every single one of you need to read this book. So we did. I read it. I listened to the audiobook, you know, trying to do as best as I possibly can to prepare for what we had in store. I obviously have a very different lens being involved on, you know, the making of parts of this for the score, you know, just designing the sounds, which of course we'll get into. I think it's been really cool to see how much this movie has almost rejuvenated the film going experience, I would say, you know, especially the first one being pushed back an entire year due to COVID. And it kind of was that first big one that brought all of us back into theaters years after we were trapped at home and couldn't really go out. And I truly think it reminded us of the beauty and the magic of cinema, you know?
Yeah.
in
quite literally that it was John and I's first movie back.
And I mean, still to this day, there's still so many people that are just discovering it and exploring it. I mean, I think by this point it'd be pretty hard to find somebody who's never heard of it, right? But just I don't think I've ever seen so many people, even just online or just in the world, talking about this movie in all aspects of it. You don't get everything in the first movie. Mm-hmm. You don't get everything in the second movie, you know? And it's, I think it's really cool because we're in such a TikTok mindset of like, we want everything. We want all the answers in 10 seconds. And this one really genuinely makes you like live in it. I think in a really great way. Like, it really is just, you shut out the rest of whatever this world, you travel thousands of years in the future, and then boom, you're in this whole new world. I think just seeing how excited people are, and you guys are just like a testament to that, because you've literally made a podcast micro dissecting every little section to a point where, you know, I'm sure if the filmmakers, you know, caught wind of this, they'd be very appreciative of it. And, you know, I'm sure they'd even learn something from it. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, our next guest is going to be Denis Villeneuve. So,
oh, great, great. I'll text him right now and be like, Denis, you got to get on this, man.
It's, you know, my roommate is she works in film. She's a set decorator, set design. And the past couple of films that she's worked on have been like TikTok films where they, you know, filmed vertically and just they're made explicitly for that platform. And not exactly her, you know, what she went to film school for. And so it's an interesting, so what you said really kind of resonated with me there, but, this adaptation has been great. You know, the recent adaptations, and I don't know how much you have listened or watched kind of past attempts at adaptations of the Dune universe. But it is, it's a challenge. It is a really, really large story to try and tell in a visual format. So I just think y'all are doing great work.
I appreciate that. Yeah, no, I mean, it's you know, and hats off to everybody who has done it. And at the time, you know, the David Lynch films and the Children of Dune series, you know, all these things that people were working with the best that they could. But you're right. It's just it's so dense, you know.
Yeah.
In a way that when it comes down to it, it doesn't matter what flashy technology or visuals or sound or music or any of that. It comes down to the heart of the characters and the narrative of the story, which I think we can all agree this cast just destroyed in such a, I mean that in the most positive way, right? Like, they just obliterated how you could interpret this story and really connect with the audience. So it's, I've just been very fortunate to have been a part, a sliver of what went into this mecha beast of this project, you know?
Yeah,
sure. So. Well, before we dive into what you contributed and everything that the music team does, I want to kind of take a step back, you know, for people that don't know who Raul Vega is and what you do and what your contributions to the larger music team as a whole mean. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to get an understanding of that for everyone.
Sure.
So feel free to, you know, disclose as much as you want and or can.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, anything from past projects is pretty, pretty open. It's what we're working on right now and what's coming down the line that we got to be a little hush hush about. So I am I'm a man of many titles when it comes to my work in the professional audio space. But for the last 13 years, I've been working at Remote Control Productions, which to any film music nerd knows, this is Hans Zimmer's recording studio. So I've been working alongside him for over a decade now. Started off as an intern making him coffee, and I guess I made a good cup of joe, so they hired me on to try me out for a few months to then start making digitized instruments for Man of Steel. So, nice. My job is part recording engineer. It's part sound designer, part Foley artist, big-time editing, you know, mixing artist. All that stuff kind of encompasses into what I do. And so my job essentially is, the way I can explain this without getting too tech heavy is I am the I basically take instruments that are played by live humans and I record every section, every sound, every volume, loud, quiet, soft, you know, hard, whatever. And I chunk those up into itty bitty bits. And then I rebuild them into software that Hans can then program and play on his MIDI controlled keyboard. So that way he kind of has the orchestra, or, you know, in this case, it's not really an orchestra, at his fingertips, you know. So a way I can kind of describe this is if you look at this case, Hans, as the painter, and his workstation, which he writes his music into, is his canvas. A painter needs paint. So that's when he calls me and says, hey, can you get me some paint? I want this very specific blue or this specific green from this particular artist. We need all these different colors and variations and shades. Can you get that for me? And while you're at it, get me some of your own interpretations of it. You know, bring some surprise to me as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a very interesting job. I've done everything from recording, you know, pianos, violins, trash cans to literal train box cars, pedal steel guitars. I mean, endless vocals, as we all heard on the Dune scores. you know, there really is nothing that's off the table.
Nice.
So yeah, that's what my job is. I've cycled through many credits depending on what studios deem is an appropriate name, because my job is so obscure. It's not quite appropriate to call it recording engineer because that is part of it, but there's also other elements to it. So I've been called sample development, digital instrument preparation, digital instrument team, digital instrument design. Any of those titles work. But I actually, about a year ago, oh wow, it's actually almost a year, there was a podcast interview that I did where I actually brought in some people to kind of interview some of my colleagues, and we give a whole sampling background on it. So I'll shoot that out to you guys if you guys want to hear it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll make sure to post the link in the description for this episode as well, so that way other people can go check that out.
I don't want to be promoting another show on your show. So,
No. Dude, we're all about that and everything. And I know that, you know, Zach and I have talked quite a bit in our previous minute episodes about growing up in music heavy houses and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got my drum set behind me. I've got my guitars in the room behind me, and Zach's got all of his guitars behind him on the video there. So like that is the world that we live in outside of the podcast. Great. Or one of the worlds that we live in outside of that. So like, that's definitely something I'm going to want to go check out.
Cool.
Because music's everything, man. Like
it's the source of, I do so many things outside of the music space, believe it or not. I tried to fill my plate up as if working with Hans isn't busy enough. I like, what other things can I do here? And even if it's not specifically music related, whether it's my script writing or, you know, even going on a hike, the music is always the source of everything, and every bit of storytelling that I do, it always comes back to music, and I always phrase stuff in music. So yeah, trust me, get it.
I'm gonna gas you up a little bit here. Yesterday I was doing some housework, and I was replacing my front door, which is a, you know, no small task.
Right. But
I was listening, and in preparation for this, I listened to most of the Rose Drive podcast.
Oh my God! Wow!
Yeah,
you really did your homework.
I tried. Yeah, and man, I gotta say, it's really good. I really enjoyed it.
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Guys, whoever's watching or listening, I did not ask Zach to do that. thank you, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, that was that was something I did on my own, that I just wanted to build a portfolio outside of all the stuff I'd been doing for Hans. And you know, I was like, well, I've got these engineering skills, I've been doing this, and one of my best friends was an actor, and we were just trying to figure out what can we do together. So I said, well, why don't we start a podcast series? And he's like, have you ever written anything before? I said, nope. Last thing I remember writing was in third grade. I wrote this story about an alien that came down to Earth to steal my underpants. And like, that was it. I was like, well, we probably can't write that story. That may not be appealing to a larger audience. So, but yeah, I just started writing this narrative podcast. A friend of mine had got me into podcasts back in 2015, 2016, mostly like the NPR shows, you know, This American Life and Radio Lab. And I just remember thinking how cool these narratives were being told. But I was like, where are the fiction ones? I'm a fiction cat. You know, where are the Netflix shows for your ears?
Yeah.
So I just started writing a story. I tried getting my friends here who are writers, but it was weird. Like, you come to LA to write, but none of you guys are writing. And so eventually I was like, I'll just do it myself. And then wrote and then cast it, because a lot of my friends are, you know, in the acting space as well, and directed it, sound designed it, did the score for the most part of it. And then for the finale, I got, you know, some actual real composers to come in to write. So it was a fun time, but, you know, it led me to expanding my mind beyond the film music space, and, you know, got me representations, and we were working on a TV adaptation in 2019 before COVID hit. But yeah, it's really cool that you listen to that, man. I really appreciate it. I was like, how do you, you know, to me, and I could even link this back to Dune. It's not really the story, but how do you tell the story?
Yeah.
You know, and for me, oh, there's a cattail.
There's a few of them.
And, you know, for me, for that project specifically, I was like, well, you know, I'm not much of a screenwriter. That's not my world. I'd love to get into that, but I don't think visually, I think orally, you know. So I was thinking, what's the cool way I could tell this little detective story that has a lot of twists and turns, but really using the audio as a way to tell it, as opposed to just kind of what we're doing here, just someone speaking in a microphone. You know, let's really build out. I wanted my listeners to be kind of culprits in the story. Which is why I'm sure if at least you made it through the first episode, which I know it's very slow at first, but you know,
I'm through episode 8, so don't spoil the ending for me.
Wow, that's incredible. You do not have to listen anymore, man. I will tell you,
I'm in it now.
I will tell you, the last few episodes really beef up quite a bit, but jumping back and forth between our protagonist who's talking to the audience or talking to people in real life, and then you get into his inner thoughts where, you know, we change the sound, we get it really reverb heavy, really like proximity. But, you know, I was like, it'd be kind of cool if, you know, because we all talk through filters, and some of us, well, some of us do, some of us don't, but, you know, like, I was like, how kind of cool would it be is if our unreliable narrator, as it were, where you could actually get into his inner thoughts and all the characters he's talking about. So that way the audience knows stuff that he doesn't and knows stuff that the other people he's talking to don't know. And so you kind of get to be a detective going along for the ride of it. So,
I'm thoroughly enjoying the story so far.
Thank you. Man, I appreciate that.
It gave me a question in my head that, you know, maybe it's related to Dune, but it's probably just related to your job as a whole.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like diegetic music in that show. Just background stuff, you know, cars whizzing by, birds chirping, all this kind of stuff that makes you feel super immersed in that story. Do you notice that in real life? Like if you're just walking down the street if you're thinking about like maybe a project you got coming up or just whatever. Do you notice all these like little sounds given your world? Like do you notice that stuff?
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. It's really funny you bring that up because I do, literally to the point where when I'm driving, sometimes I have to drive in silence because my brain and ears are so accustomed to. Look, I'm just going to give it to you guys straight. My job, it's amazing. It's fun. It's really cool, but it's incredibly tedious. And you're listening to the same sounds over and over and over and over and over again. And sometimes it's beating on a trash can. Sometimes it's the highest note and these deep harmonics of a violin. You know, they have different qualities and do different things to your ears. But to the point now where I hear everything, you know. I can go to a restaurant and the thing is I'm really good at focusing, so I'm never distracted, but I can kind of hyper zoom into the sounds that are happening outside or next to me or whatever, and they're all kind of filtering in one way or another. I don't think I ever really get overwhelmed by it because I'm just used to so much noise, especially living in Los Angeles. But no, I mean 100% I notice all of it, and it's always funny when I tell people that they're like, they're just like, how are you not going crazy? Like, how is it? Like, I don't know. Like, I kind of play with it because it inspires other efforts into my work, you know?
And that's kind of what I was getting at. It was like, you notice all these like little things and, you know, never know when that's going to come back up in something in a future project, you know, just file it away and maybe you'll use it again.
No, it's true. And that's part of why my job is kind of Foley, because as we know, Foley isn't taking the actual material and taking that as a sound source to make as mm-hmm. what we use in movies. You know, I mean, the classic one is from Indiana Jones, of the punches where, you know, a guy beating like a stack of jackets with a baseball bat. You know, if yeah. you guys ever seen a bar fight, like contact from fist to cheek doesn't make a sound, you know. It'd be really funny if it did, and I honestly believe there'd be less fights because people would do that and they start cracking up. But you know, or like, you know, like people are walking in the snow and it's like, oh, they have a tub of like cornstarch that they're stepping on, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm always trying to think about that in context as well as like, what are some of these sounds that I'm hearing out in the real world? And what are they reminding me of? You know, what are, I mean, a perfect example is, you know, what we did on The Lone Ranger, you know, was this whole locomotive movie transporting train track to train track from one part of the country to the end. And we built a drum kit out of a train box car. We literally went to a train box car. It was Chris Carter. Chris Carter created the X-Files. He was one of Hans's neighbors, and he just had a box car in his yard because... That's what you do after you make the X-Files. Yeah, and he was kind enough to let us go in and record some sounds. We brought a mobile rig and set up like 4 or 6 microphones and just cranked wheels, took sledgehammers to the sides, you know, stomped on it, got a lot of rust and dust that came in. And then I mm-hmm. went through, cleaned up all that audio and said, okay, well, now I have all this weird, these weird textures. And, that sounds, what is this for? He said, well, we're going to bring in Jason Bonham to do some drum tracks. And Jason Bonham is the son of John Bonham.
Fucking sick.
Legendary drummer of Led Zeppelin. And Jason's, I mean, he's a beast. Really, really cool cat. And he had his electronic drum kit. And so what I had to go through is, you know, John, just like your drum kit behind you, I had to go through and think of all these train sounds, what sounds like a tom? What sounds like a crash? What sounds like a crash sizzle? Mm-hmm. What sounds like a kick? You know, what sounds like a bell hit, all these things. I listened through all these industrial sounds, and then I programmed them to his drum kit. So as he's playing his V drum kit, he's actually literally triggering a train system. Yeah. It's crazy. So, you know, it's just fun. It's all experimenting. But when mm-hmm. your brain starts working like that, you kind of realize everything and anything is an instrument. And the more obscure, as long as there's a purpose for it, kind of the better, you know.
Yeah.
It keeps it fresh and keeps your brain active and not just accepting that the sounds that are made from, you know, the things that we have decided are instruments, that's the limitation. When you start thinking beyond 12 notes and that sound in general is music, you can make some pretty crazy stuff, like what happened for Dune Part 1 and Part 2.
Yeah,
stuff gets weird once you start diving into like semitones and stuff, mm-hmm. and you start breaking away from the traditional, you know, Eurocentric mindset of thinking about how music is composed and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the internet's a scary place sometimes, but I think one of the beautiful things about the internet is that we have this way to like access all this music and stuff that there's no way that I would have probably discovered, you know, some of the artists and stuff that I listen to on a pretty regular basis without it, just simply because they're from quite literally the other side of the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, literally this interview wouldn't have happened if it weren't for us being able to chat, right?
Yeah. I'm curious a little bit just to know, like, what your origins with music were. Did you grow up in a musical household? Like, for me, my dad was a drummer, so the moment that I could put two hands around drumsticks and just start banging on stuff, like that was the start for me. But, you know, was this a later in, you know, teen life and early high school kind of thing for you? Did you grow up with it? And then what led you from your first introduction to music into ultimately music as a profession?
So I grew up with music in the sense we always had music playing in our house, which is weird because I realized a lot of my friends' families didn't. They just had like quiet family dinners and all that stuff, and you know, we're Latin, so we just, it's always music playing around, you know. So I actually grew up with a lot of 60s and 70s soul music. My parents, you know, when they immigrated to San Francisco from Central America, And they essentially grew up in the Bay Area, but like where they grew up, that's what they were listening to, you know? So to me, classics and oldies and all that were, you know, it wasn't, you know, the Beatles or AC/DC or anything in the rock world. In fact, I didn't know anything about, I still don't. I've learned as I've gotten older, but I grew up with a lot of 60s and 70s soul music and then a lot of salsa and a lot of R&B. Hip hop was kind of my main thing. And of course, like, you know, your top 40, whatever. But I never got into music until I was 16. I think I was 16 when it happened. It was literally just because a group of my friends wanted to make a band. And my buddy had picked up a bass guitar and he was like, yeah, I'm gonna start playing bass. I'm like, cool, man. He's like, hey, what are you gonna play? And I'm like, I don't know. He's like, well, you got long fingers. Maybe you could do piano. You could do guitar. I tried guitar. Way too hard for me. Couldn't do it. So Zach, I really applaud you for having all this, because I've always wanted to, but it's, man, it's, I was like, maybe I should just somewhere I can just sit and tinker around a little bit. I have everything laid out for me, you know.
Just because I got him back there doesn't mean I'm good.
Okay. I'm sure you're still better than I am. Yeah.
Don't let him try and be super modest. He is a good player.
I'm sure. I hope you interject this part with like a little guitar solo during this interview. Yeah.
Excellent.
It started with that, but you know, I didn't really have an interest in doing any pop music or anything, and classical music was something I had always been interested in, but the truth is, there were two vehicles that got me into that, and it really was film music. You know, the two soundtracks I remember the most as a kid were Nightmare Before Christmas and The Lion King. Danny Elfman, Hans Zimmer. And, you know, I remember when I was thinking, like, I remember I did this whole, before I'd even started my job or more, before I even, like, went to finish college, I was at home and I for the summer, and we had, like, a local in my little town, a local little, like, you know, arts program thing, and the director asked me to come in and talk about music and film. And I gave this whole backstory on The Lion King and how Simba walking up Pride Rock, of like what it symbolized and all this big stuff, because I was just such a huge fan. And, you know, we watched the video without any music or sound and then watch it again with it, and to talk about the emotional difference. I think I must have been like 18 or 19, and I thought I was so deep and I understood all of what went into it, but it was really me just conveying the emotional impact behind it. So that movie is the one that got me into film music, the 1994 one. You know, fast forward to 2019 and I'm working on the remake with Hans himself, and it was like the whole circle of life just kind of happened.
Yeah.
But besides film music, it was video game music, you know, and back in my day, kids, it was the, you know, the Final Fantasy games, Final Fantasy 6, 7, 8, you know, all those ones, and the Resident Evil, the Silent Hill games, absolutely big Silent Hill fan. And there was just something about those scores and those soundtracks where the thematic content was so intoxicating. And so, and it was also really easy to play on the piano, because I didn't know how to read music for years. I'm still not great at it, even though I went through a conservatory. but I just taught myself by ear. You know, that's kind of how I had to go about it, was just, you know, listen and play and figure it out. And when you do that, you kind of also end up inadvertently becoming a composer or arranger of sorts, because you're not going to get it right. So you're like, well, it's kind of close, but what if I did this? You know, I wasn't there to follow the rules. I wanted to hear what it was, play it, and then put in my own interpretation of it. So that's kind of what led me into wanting to be a composer, working in film music, and growing up in the Bay Area. You know, the movie industry's not there. So I was like, well, I got to go down to Southern California. So I went to Cal State Long Beach. You know, did all my stuff there. It was all very classical, very Western, very academic. So there was really two media classes. One was a sound design class. The other was film scoring. But there were only one class per semester. So I didn't really get my hands on it. So I had to do all my scoring from home on my, it's like my iMac G5 from like, you know, 2006 or something. And you just kind of have to teach yourself, you know. And then essentially when I graduated, my college friend and one of my dearest friends, also former roommate, Sebastian Najon, shout out Sebastian. Sebastian is one of the primary composers at Riot Games. He's involved in all the League of Legends. Wow. He's a producer on pretty much all the songs on Arcane, the Netflix series. guy's a beast. But we were college roommates together, and we lived together because we both were obsessed with film music. And he had gotten an internship at Remote Control, and then he recommended me, and then he was hired there. And at the end of my internship, he ended up leaving to work at CineSamples, which was a sample library company, and then got picked up by Riot. But then, you know, he talked to the whole team and said, hey, you know, Raul's been doing okay here. Like, you know, I would love, like, maybe we could have him be the replacement for part of the team. And then, you know, that's when they called me, and it started from that point. So, yeah.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah. Zach's not really one for video games, but I could probably talk for hours about game soundtracks and game sound design and everything. I won't call them friends, but I've had communications and like some interactions online with some audio people at one of my favorite studios, which is Bungie, and their audio team kills it every time. And you know, the stuff that they do is incredible, and it's, you know, you're talking about listening for samples and stuff out in the world and everything, and it's fun to see them like kind of post some of their videos online of them just like messing around with the strangest things and then transporting that audio into the game, and then you're just spending time looking for samples and trying to figure out what sounds make what.
I mean, so. And their databases are, I had a buddy who was working at Naughty Dog years ago when they were working, you know, however long, the 40, 50 years it took them to make Last of Us 2 years ago. And I went in and sat in with the head sound designer. And this guy, I don't recall his name, but he's a really cool guy, really energetic. And he had all these speakers and just his, I mean, the amount of minuscule, like just for footsteps is insane. It could be like, you know, left footstep on gravel rock, wet, left footstep gravel rock, slightly wet, a little less slightly wet. You know, this is if the pebble hits like your pinky toe, this is how it hits your big toe, like all these things so specific. I mean, it is, that's what I'm always like, when I think my job is like a lot of these little tinkering toys that you have to put together, I think about what these guys do. I'm like, these guys are the true artists. You know, that's where cinema needs to start looking is really in video games, because that's, I mean, it is, it's wild. So yeah, it's really cool to see, like those masters are. It's very inspiring to me, to be honest. So
well, I had one more audio question, and then I swear we're going to talk about.
No, all good. We gotta hey, man, I'm here forever, man. You guys, yeah, I'm here. I'm on your time, so.
Well, yeah, I have a buddy at work who's his outside of work life is recording and music production and all this kind of stuff. And I asked him, I was like, what kind of questions would you like to, you know, would be good to ask Raul when we talk to him? And he gave me two. Okay. And feel free to get as nerdy as you want to about these. So first one out there is, what kind of gear do you use most? You know, synths, preamps, DAWs, plugins. Like, is there anything that you find yourself going back to again and again and again to do your job?
God, you know, here's the thing. I can answer that for my side of it, but you also got to understand it's not just me that's setting everything up in the studio. Sure. You know, we really do have a team. So our whole engineering team, whose their job is specifically for engineering, and that's not just for Hans, it's for the whole studio. And then, of course, we can't not talk about Alan Meyerson, who was a mixing artist on this and was mixing Hans's scores for over 30-plus years. He'll come in, and he'll set up his Flea microphones and, you know, all these, you know, his Neve preamps. And, his, you know, right now I'm recording in my Apollo X4 interface through, like, a Manly Voxbox pre, which hopefully when you guys get the audio, you're like, okay, that works. You know, so, I mean, we've got so much stuff there that I wouldn't even be able to tell you what goes into it. We've used the DPA 4011 condenser microphones, a lot in the past. They don't make them anymore, but they were very, very clean, very flat. We used to use AKG 414. Mics for our you actually use this a lot for drums or overhead. You know, before people thought of this as a podcast mic, you know, we would use SM7 on kick drums, you know, because as we know, they're very boomy, they're very warm. God, I don't even know, you know, it's there's so many different types of microphones these days, you know, it's so hard to keep track. And we even have people there that can make microphones, you know, or can make a model after other stuff, you know, but, you know, of course people are like, oh, the U87, like, sure, for some things, but it's not the one all be all microphone. You know, I think this $400 little guy right here does a job on a lot of things, you know, when I'm doing my voiceover stuff, cause that's another side hustle I'll do, which I'll get into later. I have a Rode NTG3, shotgun microphone, which I love. I've done vocals on that. In fact, for, this last fall, Hans and, Stephen Doerr, Omer Benjamin, they were the three composers for Zack Snyder's Twilight of the Gods Netflix series, that came out this last fall. And I was a featured vocalist on it. It was my first time doing something outside of just recording and using other people's sounds. I'm like, how about you guys use me? And so I did all kinds of fun stuff, but I used the Rode NTG3, which is, you're not typically using as a vocalist. You're not typically using that type of shotgun microphone vocal. That's great for voiceover stuff or for, you know, on location, like live mixing. But I was like, you know what? It's a very intimate. I want to have that kind of hyper focused sound coming out. So I use that, and, you know, we found a way to make it work. Some of my lows got a little too low and it kind of came out in the wash, but yeah, you know, as far as speakers go, we do use Questeds. That's what Hans has in his room. And it's not even because they're, you know, like the most amazing, incredible sound in the entire world, but it works really well with his room. And, you know, you guys know this being musicians. I mean, I don't know how old you guys are, but I used to have to do the whole record, burn on a CD, check it in the car before everything was streaming. And even now, I'm not mixing with, you know, crazy, outlandish, hyper-specific gear. I'm mixing stuff so that I can make sure that, is this going to sound good listening on your iPhone or your Android? Because that's how people are going to consume this media. Like, I can, you know, hopefully, Zach, when you've been listening to Rose Drive, you have been listening with headphones. But if not, I'm expecting most people are just going to be listening on their phone. So you got to make sure that it's for the lowest common denominator that you're going to be doing that for. And I've talked about this on another podcast. That's what's kind of fun, is that all the gear that we use and everything, that how it sounds. Like, I just did a podcast in December for Interstellar because it hit its 10-year anniversary. And I, you know, that was one of my first projects, and the coolest thing, regardless of there, I think there was an Atmos mix that Alan had done for the 10th anniversary, which you can listen to on Apple Music. Like, the most memorable thing is listening to that score in Hans's room, because no one will ever hear that score the way that it kind of was meant to in some ways, because it's just different. It's just it, like, you're never going to hear it. I don't care if you have a vinyl, if you have, you know, an Atmos setup, if you're rocking in a movie theater, it does not hit the same way than in the space that it was created for.
Dude, I can't even imagine. Like, I feel like that's one of those moments where you're sitting there just in silence, even after it's done playing, and like no one says anything for like a few seconds, and you're just all just kind of like, holy shit.
Well, we're all quiet, and then Hans will make some cheeky remark like, oh, that wasn't half bad.
Of course.
What do we think about that one? You know? So yeah, as far as gear goes, I mean, it really just kind of fluctuates. As far as DAW goes, I mean, and I'll tell this to any composer, sound designer, anybody, you gotta know Pro Tools, you know. I'm not saying it's the only thing, and in fact it shouldn't be. You should know Cubase, you know Logic, you know, I don't know if anybody's still using Digital Performer, you know, but I also have some young cats who I work with who are kind of in the pop world, and they use Ableton, right? That's great. Know what your system is. It's fine. But I think anybody who wants to really understand certain components of this, Pro Tools is just something you got to know, because even if you're coming in, if you want to be a composer or an assistant, it's just the more ammunition you have and the more knowledge of this program is the better. I mean, there's a Pro Tools mastering, like there's a Pro Tools engineer on everything, you know? But I use that. We do build stuff sometimes in Kontakt. We also have our own proprietary software where we build our samples into, which that I can definitely not talk about.
And we wouldn't ask you to, you know, break any NDAs or anything.
No. So that's, I guess that's kind of it on the gear rant. So.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like that's one of those things, like you ask 100 people, you get 400 answers.
Yeah, this was like, I don't want to make this about gear. Yeah. The wrong show for that, yeah.
Well, it's the right show for me, because okay. I'm super interested in that.
Great.
In a past life, I worked for Apple, and I was one of their Logic trainers.
Cool.
And it doesn't mean I know the I can teach people the basics. That's pretty much what I can do for it. But I moved from Logic to I'm using Audition right now, just because I'm on a Windows machine, and that's the one that it's the closest to Logic that I could find. But it's on my bucket list, or not bucket list. It's on my to-do list to get more involved in Pro Tools, because I know that is the way to go.
Yeah. So. And then there's a second question.
Yeah, there was. And this one is, it's about, you touched on it a little bit ago, but it's the analog and digital mix. So how much of the work that you do is actual like physical recordings of analog instruments or sounds versus the digital composition stuff? Or is there a difference between the two?
Oh, God. Okay. Let me put a time cap on myself here, because otherwise the Dune Minute turns into a Dune Lifetime, right?
Last episode was two hours, I think, after edit.
About 2:15, yeah.
Economics, okay. So go for it.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a wave of so many things. You know, there's times where we have the orchestra, right? And that's an act, so that's about as organic as it gets. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's recording these live organic sounds, converting those sounds into zeros and ones and putting them into your computer and, you know, bada bing, bada boom. There's a sampling side, which is what I do, which is taking these instruments, deconstructing them through audio, through recording, and then rebuilding them into software. Whether that's something like Kontakt or we program them to like a synthesizer, completely different. Mm-hmm. And then we have the synth arrangement area and the synth building stuff. That's not my specialty. In fact, Hans was kind enough to give me and my colleague a shot to try and do some synth design work for Dunkirk. And we tried, and he was like, great effort. Let's go back to recording drums, right? Which was totally fair. That was totally fair. But that whole, you know, granular synth area, that is all... Yeah. In the box for the most part.
Yeah.
But he also still has, I mean, if you guys seen pictures of his rooms, he has synths all over the place. Yeah. So it's project to project. It depends on what we're doing. He always likes a combination of all of it, you know? You know, like, when we'll get into this later, Dune, you know, there's a big theme that we hear that are bagpipes. And there were bagpipes, but then there was also a guitarist that made his guitar sound like a bagpipe, you know? So
yeah,
it's always this kind of mind meld, and they all kind of play with each other. Yeah. So, you know, me, I'm kind of comfortable, as we would say, in the box. You know, I like to work with the stuff that's in the computer and mess around, but I really love using organic sounds and taking them in and seeing what we can do to tweak them and make them sound kind of almost foreign to what the original source material was. You know, perfect example for Twilight of the Gods, it's a Norse mythology series. So that gave me a lot of freedom to just make all these crazy choirs and cool sounds, which I had done. And I did this massive choir of wolf howls that I was just howling like crazy. And I remember sending it to Hans and Omer and Steven, and I sent them all these other tracks and all these other, you know, ideas. And they were like, yeah, you know, these are all sound really cool, but I don't know. We don't know what the hell to do with these damn wolf howls. And I was like, maybe you can't, because it just ultimately sounds like a guy that's howling, you know, like it doesn't there's nothing intense or scary or whatever about it. But then Omer, the genius that he is, he's like, let me run it through some processing and let me pitch it a little bit, because it's going all over the place. And he found such a cool way. I can send you guys a link to the track to where it's used, but it's really, really cool to see what he did and transformed it into this terrifying sound. With layers upon layers, to where if I hadn't told you it was me howling like an idiot, you probably wouldn't have been able to tell. You probably would have been like, is that something that they made like in Zebra, like in a synthesizer? Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to answer that question. I don't mean to cop out and say it is everything, but it really is. I mean, those are kind of the three areas. Is you got your samples, which is me, which is, you know, I'm kind of one totem pole. You have synth design, which is Hans and people that are way better at that. and building all those sounds at. And then you have the orchestra as well as our live musicians as well. You know, the approach for Dune was very different than the approach for Blitz, which was very different for the approach for Dark Phoenix, which was different than James Bond. So, you know, some of these things are kind of limited by the project, but it's a good thing because you don't, you know, we're not going to put the Dune sounds in, you know, like a rom-com, although that would actually be really funny.
I don't know. I feel like we could make a rom-com out of God Emperor of Dune.
You probably could. Actually, you probably could.
Well, cool. Well, let's talk about Dune for a little bit. How in the world did you first get involved in this project? Like, did they approach you? Do you approach them? Like, how did you get connected with this team?
So,
or were you already at the studio and they just got the project?
Yeah. So I'm, like I said, I've been working with Hans. My internship turned into a job. So I am employed by his company, of course, by him as well. So any project, and again, I'm very fortunate about this. And you know, the tough reality is it's hard. It's hard to make it as a composer. And even all the other components that go into it, mixing or music editing, any of that, it's very tricky. But Hans, being who he is and what he's built, he always wants sounds. And so he's probably one of the only composers, to my knowledge, actually, that has two people, or even just one, who is their main job is to create these sounds and to be sampling, because every project has to have a brand new color palette. So I'd already been working with him, you know, for 8 years or so at this point, or however long it's been. So I don't know how it all came to us. I do know that we did come on the first project we worked on with Denis was Blade Runner 2049.
Beautiful movie.
Yeah.
Wonderful movie.
It was incredible. And this was another project that Hans, of course, loved the original one. And funny story, Hans had just done a leg of one of his tours. This is back in 2015 or 16. I can't remember the year. And he'd come back and he was supposed to take a month and a half off to just recharge because it was a long tour. And then he was going to go back out. Comes back and he's like, I know I'm supposed to take a break, but we got this new movie and we have to do it. I cannot stress this enough. And so we came in and I remember we had a screening. It was like the day he got back from like one of his first legs of his tour, his big one. He was supposed to take a break and we all watched it. We had a screening of it and we're like, oh my God, this is incredible. Like, this is mind blowing. And this of course called for the heavy big guns for him to bring out the synthesizers again. Perfect project that needed to be all synth. There was also time factored into it, but it's Blade Runner. Like probably not going to have, you know, like a tuba playing necessarily,
right?
You know, so that project was one that was really, really beautiful. But so we had finished that, and from what I understand, and I'm recalling this from I think an interview Hans did where he said that he and Denis were talking about this, about Dune had come up, and I think during that time Denis had been wanting to get his hands on it, and he'd been wanting to because that movie was just such a, I mean, it was just tied to his life. And then realized he had a kinship in that with Hans, and Hans just, I guess, just said, you know, if you get this movie, you have to let me do this with you. And I think they had such a great time on Blade Runner 2049 that then when this came out, they were ready to go. But we, you know, it'd been years in the making, you know, none of these projects. I mean, there's some projects we get that I like to call rescue missions that you get and you're like, oh shit, this movie, we're replacing a composer, or, you know, this is just coming to us very last minute. We have a few months to do it.
Yeah.
And then when you get movies like this, you know, all these movies, all of the Nolan movies that Hans has done, I've been on two of them, Dunkirk and Interstellar. There's such a open communication and bond between composer and director that they get to kind of be involved all from the genesis of it, you know? And I think that's when, you know, the score is going to be really good, is it's not like, you know, a filmmaker who's been making a movie for 6 years and now he has 6 months to put a score behind it. And the score's got to tell the story of everything you're experiencing. And somehow the composer has to channel the last 6 years of your baby into, you know, and make it personal for them. That's the thing, is if it's not personal to the artist, it's not going to really come out, you know, the way that you might want. So Yeah, I don't know all the mechanics of like how it came and paperwork and all this stuff, but I will tell you, we started our first project with Denis, and yeah, we all know that movie was incredible, and then when Dune came, we all were very, very excited, and we just started experimenting and stuff from the beginning, from before COVID, and then, you know, did the rest of it from home, and won an Oscar, so kind of crazy, right?
Dude, it's
well, it's clearly the right team.
That's insane to think. Yep. That's insane to think that you guys, you know, just, I mean, obviously we all lived COVID and everything, and our work from home was very different than your work from home, but, you know, ultimately working from home to win an Oscar is pretty badass.
Pretty crazy, right? But that also tells you something about the team, right? You know, we've all been working there for some of us for a while, some of them for not too long. By there, I already had, you know, 7 or 8 years. And, you know, it's, we all know how to communicate well. And truly, and I've said this a million times, it's not about, you know, like Hans and Hans's music. It's about what are we doing for the project? What are we doing for the filmmaker? Yeah. And he's very adamant about that. And he has to be, because it's not like, I need you to do this for me and just, you know, that's it because I need it. We really collaborate and we talk about ideas. As I was saying before, he'll say, can you get these sounds? But also whatever else you can get, please throw in the mix. Because if you're only giving me the things I'm asking for, I'm not going to be taken by surprise, you know? So give me those things I'm asking for and then mess around and find some other stuff. Maybe they work, maybe they won't work, you know? But yeah, I mean, working from home during all that was crazy. It was hard, you know? It also was our sanctuary because the world was scary. And so we got to kind of still live and exist in the space and, you know, and do all that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any, personal favorite moments of music in the Dune movies?
Yeah, I mean, all the so there were three albums released for the first movie. There's the original motion picture soundtrack, there's the Dune sketchbook, and then there was the I always mess up the name. I think it was the Heart and Soul of Dune or something, which is the that was written by Hans so that you could listen to it while you're reading the book, as far as I understand.
John, get on that. He's got that on his coffee table.
Heart and Soul of Dune, Volume 1, is highly referenced, never sponsored. It's a running joke from our first season. But yeah, no, we talk about it in nearly every episode of the show. I mean, the book is, for people that don't have it, a must-have, just because the amount of stuff that you learn in there, and a lot of it is very visual. Obviously it's a book, but you know, to be able to have that audio component to it as well,
it's massive, is
awesome. Yeah. So,
No, totally. And so, so those were the, you know, those are just what was released to the public. I mean, there was so much that people haven't heard, but working with the vocalists, Suzanne Waters, Loar Cutler. Loar is of course the voice of Dune. You know, she's the big chant that you're not going to get me to do here.
Dang it. That was one of our bullet points.
I know. who we'd been working with her since Dark Phoenix. She was a massive part of that score as well. I mean, all these short little all that stuff. This percussive stuff. Edie Lehman-Boddicker, who's just this world renowned vocalist and vocal contractor. She's worked with everybody from Luther Vandross to Michael Jackson to everybody. If any movie has a score with vocals on it, there's a chance she put all that together. She's done stuff with Billie Eilish. She does the Grammys every year. I mean, she's incredible. But so the three of them came in, and during kind of the beginning stages of Dune, when we were just figuring out some stuff to do, we just went through the glossary. Because as you know, there's deep, rich words in Dune that we didn't know how to pronounce, but we did our best. We made them musical. We came up with our own rhythmic patterns for it and then just did all these crazy chants to it. And we did all this pre-COVID. So much to the fact, which is kind of crazy, that someone from Warner came in to shoot some BTS of us working on the samples. And I remember the guy had come in, and he came in for like a week and was shooting a bunch of stuff. And, you know, I'm never seen on screen. I'm always behind, you know. And
oh, we went looking for you.
In the, oh, cool.
Behind the scenes stuff with all the movies.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah. We were looking. I'm not, there's not much of me in it, man. I put the sounds together and that's it. But for this featurette for Dune Part One, I remember he came and he was talking to us and you know, my colleagues and everyone kind of stoked. We're like, hey, so is this going to be like on YouTube or is this going to be like a Blu-ray, whatever? He's like, look, man, we're shooting a week of this. Maybe they'll use 5 seconds if you're lucky. You know, there's so much other stuff we're going to do because, you know, you got whatever sessions you're coming in. You know, we're going to shoot all that stuff. So it's going to be fragmented. And then COVID hits a week later. Mm. So nobody's shooting anything. So the only BTS they had for the making of the music for it were my sessions. And so that's why when you see the featurette for Dune Part One and you see Hans talking because that was, you know, later. And then you see us, that's why, is because, you know, while the whole score was being made, everybody was just curled up in their room. So that was kind of a trip. But going back to your question, yeah, working with the vocalist was incredible. I mean, Hansa said this a million times. I mean, if there's one thing that was going to translate years into the future was going to be the voice. Everything else mm-hmm. needs to sound foreign and not real. And even if we are using organic instruments, how do we muffle them up and make them sound so like dystopian and kind of out of here? But so for part one, I would say working with the vocalist was incredible. The bagpipes, you know,
the infamous bagpipes.
They were there, and I wish I could say I had an amazing time listening to those blaring bagpipes all the time. You know, but
are you looking at my notes? Because that's the next question. Specifically all about whether you worked with Guthrie Govan on the guitar component, or you know, if you were, you know, putting the bagpipes and everything together.
So actually, it's perfect. So I didn't work directly with Guthrie Govan on this one. The bagpipes, that was all their thing. I had nothing to do with it. But we did have a bagpipe ensemble in Scotland. Oof. That had done. That I think it was like 30 people that were recording it. And we had a source connect into it. And I was trying to type my notes as fast as I could to the engineers and be like, okay, no way, oh shit, we need this. But we made all kinds of crazy sounds with that, but it was a lot of editing for a while. And you know, I just remember because I was working from home and my poor roommates are just hearing like it's like cats being murdered, you know.
Well, my high school had a pipe and drum corps.
Oh, really?
So, you know, I wasn't in the pipes part of it, but I know how loud bagpipes are when you are standing next to a group of 10 people playing them.
Yeah.
So I know exactly what your roommates were enduring.
Oh, yeah.
As you're going through.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. Millisecond by millisecond on these audio files,
and that's just,
you know, scraping it for everything you possibly can.
Yeah, and that was just cleaning it up, and then I send it to Hans, and then he's torturing his family with it, with his daughter, because she's in the other room. She's like, God, what is that sound? Can you, you know? But then it becomes one of the most, you know, iconic marches of the whole score. But no, I mean that session. I wish I was actually physically there for it, but I will say probably, I don't talk about this too much. But you can listen to all this in the Dune sketchbook, the first track, Song of the Sisters. We had recorded, I think it was Lisa Gerrard and Laura Cutler and Edie Boddicker. And they essentially created this really long chant and their own rhythmic pattern for it. There was a language that was made up for it. And it was probably about 2.5 minutes worth of material. And they just performed it. And they sang every note in their register and they did three different volumes, you know, soft, medium, loud, and then there was a whisper. And different phonetics, different sounds, you know, different phrasing. And we got it, and we were so overwhelmed with a bunch of other stuff. Hans sent me the audio file. He's like, I don't know, can you do something with this? Okay. So I go through it, and I listen to it. And it's long, right? Now, the easiest, worst solution would have been to just take that audio file, build it into a sampling engine so that when you hit the note, it'll trigger that audio file and it'll do the whole thing. But the thing is, you have no control over that. So if you do that, it's playing from beginning to end, or you can adjust some parameters, but that doesn't give you any sort of control. But I listened to the whole chant and, you know, I was like, you know what? This feels intuitively like these could be broken up into different subphrases. So what if we took this and we broke these up into 13 subphrases? And So I did that. But because it wasn't designed like that, I had to go in and take and figure out what felt like a proper subphrase and where could I loop each point so that when you're playing it and you program it, it doesn't lose its quality and it doesn't speed up or slow down. And some of it literally involved carving out some of their breath from some parts and tacking it on to the end of a part so that when it loops, you know, they can, and then they go into it again. Otherwise, their voice just stops and then it just comes in really harsh. But so I had done that and it had taken me a very long time to do it. But I guess he loved it. And so then I had to do it for a bunch of other stuff. But as far as I know, that first track on Dune Sketchbook, Song of the Sisters, those are all samples. Mm-hmm. So it was the phrases. Wow. And then we also cut the individual little sounds. So like one of the phrases is Kea Lundra Sa, Kea Lundra Sa. So we did versions that was just Kea Lundra Sa. And there's a bunch of other stuff. But when you listen to it, it sounds like it's just like a live performance. But that has, it's probably the most dense instrument that we had made, at least for the first one at that time. So that was my favorite one for the first one. For the second one, I got to play a little trash can. I got to play some oil drums. I got to play some water heaters, which I believe you can hear some of those on the, I think it's the Worm Army cue from the second film. They're really splashy at the top end. There's a lot of choir and stuff, but if you listen for the, like John, I'm sure you'll hear it because you're a drummer, you'll hear the psh, 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 psh. That was just building out these, you know, if you see my social media, I posted a video of us playing it a little bit.
I had that actually linked in our notes as well. Cool. So
So I would say those are probably the biggest, most memorable for my end of it. I mean, building out the sounds and rest in peace, Chaz Smith, who was a longtime collaborator of ours. Very sweet guy. He worked on, he did a lot of stuff. Man of Steel. For Blade Runner 2049, he was kind of the main exotic instrumentalist. We flew up to his barn up in Northern California. And, he's an inventor himself. He's a welder. Mm-hmm. He does all these cool stuff. But he created this instrument that we called the Hell Organ. For the second movie, and we just did so many cool things with it. And it's in like pretty much every cue of the film. You wouldn't really be able to tell, but it has like 10 personalities built into it that you can all control with faders. So you can have your main one, and then if you want to bring in kind of the scratchy personality comes in, you want to bring in the really aggressive personality, the quiet, soft, meek one, you know, and you just create a bunch of sounds out of that. So those are definitely the most memorable parts on my end for these ones. Yeah.
What, those are awesome, man. What do you think was the biggest like challenge that you faced in that movie or both movies?
For me,
aside from having to do all of this from home,
besides the whole COVID thing, you know, I think it was just, because this one was so personal for all of us, I think every single one of us was trying to outdo ourselves. And we all felt that, you know. It doesn't matter if you were in the engineering side, editing side, composing side. We all were trying to say something with our work on this. So for me, coming up with that idea, it was tricky, but then it was also executing it. And even just having the courage to do it. I used to be very, very quiet, believe it or not. If you interviewed me, you know, 6-7 years ago, it would have been a very different conversation. But just, you know, having the courage to want to take a stab at it and say, I don't know if this is going to work, which you say that to Hans and he gets excited. He's like, great. Well, then that means you have to fucking do it. You know,
figure it out.
Yeah, you have to. We make have to. Yeah. And if it doesn't, we'll take the parts that do work and we'll figure something else out. I think because we knew that this was going to be such a huge project, there was just so much pressure that we ought to place on us. Because you also got to realize, I mean, it's not just about making a cool score, it's also about making something nobody's ever heard before. You know, and I don't think there's any score quite like this out there. Time is a saying we say at our studio, time is never on your side. It's very true.
Sure.
Even during COVID and we had those extra months to really finesse it or whatever, there still wasn't enough time.
Sure. You can always make, there's always something you can do better and tweak and everything, but eventually you're going to drive yourself insane if you keep on, you know, harping on all of the details endlessly.
Well, so. it's funny. I tell people because I have a lot of friends have asked me, like, so when do you consider a project done? And I said, oh, when it's in the theaters or it's on streaming, yeah. You know, that's when you know it's done. Even if they've had the premiere and all that stuff, I'm like, I'm sure there's still a way that something could be tweaked, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to talk about this one of what was the tricky part without bringing up the fact that we were all at home and having that distance. But even if we're not talking about the physical distance from because of COVID, the emotional distance was hard. And I mean that where you guys know that music is something you do with people and making sounds and creating stuff together. There's a certain chemistry to it that just doesn't exist when you're just doing it from home and sending it off and all that stuff. And we did our best to make it work. And fortunately, we had enough stuff we did from before COVID and then after where we were able to get in a room together and have our little jam band and kind of make all that happen. But there's a lot that gets missed when you're, you know, like, obviously it'd be very tricky for the three of us to get together right now because I live very far away. But you know, it would have been fun to do this in person, you know?
Oh, of course.
Absolutely. Oh, definitely.
So yeah, I mean, it was a lot of hours, but every project is a lot of hours. You know, but I would say at least for me, and especially years into this job, I think it was just wanting to, I knew how important this project was to everybody, you know? Mm-hmm. And the brief interactions I had with Denis, which were, I mean, he's just truly is like the kindest, humble person. I didn't even know it was him. We had a meeting to demonstrate the vocals that we had done just before COVID. And he had come in to show us like a sizzle of Dune Part One. This was years ago before anything happened. And I came and I ran in the meeting late. I was so late. I was like, I'm so sorry I'm late. I didn't get this message. And Hans was like, you're fine. And I saw the vocalist who I'd been working with for years, gave him a big hug. And then Hans turns and he goes, oh, this is Denis. And I was like, because he was just sitting there. And he was like, hello, how are you? And just the sweetest human being ever. And he came in because he just wanted to see what we were doing. And then I remember we were sitting in the studio and our engineer was showcasing what we had done and showing bringing in the vocals to like demonstrate to Denis all the sounds we were making. And I'm sitting on the couch and he's sitting right next to me and he like he's getting excited, then he like hits me on the shoulder. He's like, that's so cool. I was like, dude, you're cool. Are you kidding me? Like, what? And I mean, you know, I've been working with Hans for a long time. Of course, he's, you know, I admire the man forever.
Yeah.
And you know, it's amazing to work with him. Someone like Denis, who has all these other areas that he's taking care of for this, and just him wanting to be here changed everything, as opposed to him just being like, okay, give me my music, you know? And I remember as he was leaving, he said, you guys have inspired me to, I'm going to get home and start writing some stuff for Dune Part Two with what you just showed me, you know? Wow. I'm sure he was just being polite, but it was really cool to hear, you know, like from his end that he was like a kid in a candy store. Like he was like, you know, this isn't my world necessarily, but like, I'm excited to see what you guys are making. And just to have it be such an integral part of the overall production of the movie was, you know, everything.
So, I mean, it's an artist being inspired by other artists.
That's why we do it.
It's that cycle of creativity that we all have.
Yeah.
So that's awesome, dude.
Yeah.
Cool, John. Do you have any more Dune specific questions before we kind of wind this down?
No, but I have one non Dune specific related question for you.
Okay.
Before we wrap up, what is either, you know, one movie that already is out or one movie that you would love to see be made that you could work on? So like if it's something from the past that you wish that you could have had your, you know, imprint on, or if there's, you know, another book or whatever, NDA is not being stepped on, of course, that you would love to see like either adapted for film or remade that you could say another Lion King instance.
Oh God. Okay. We're obviously not on this project because the movie I think is coming out later this year, but I already kind of mentioned it before. I was a huge fan of the Silent Hill video games, and they brought back the original director for the first one that they had made back in like 2007 or whenever it was, which I loved. The sequel, didn't love so much. But they're doing it. They did a sequel to it, and I remember when it, like, seeing the announcement, I was like, oh my god, I would give anything yeah. to be on this project. They were smart though and hired the original composer from the video games to score it, which was probably the right move. but I mean, that's what made me fall in love with sound and sound design in general. Was that, you know, Akira Yamaoka created this score that was its own genre. You know, it was mostly sound design, and even though there was a lot of like guitar elements and rock band influence in it as well, it's just so kind of unsettling that he, you know, like he still found a way to bring emotion into it. I wish I could say any books. I'm huge on memoirs right now, so I'm listening to a lot mm-hmm. of memoirs right now. I haven't really sat down with like a fiction book in a minute, so I don't know. I can't really be like, oh, you know, if Ron Perlman's movie gets made from his memoir, like, I'd love to score that, which I actually really would.
Could be interesting.
It could be interesting. Yeah. And then something that's already come out. God, I'm coming off really one note here, guys, which is funny because like, we work on all these different movies. But, I am a horror fan, like, through and through.
Yeah.
Sinister is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, horror movie. I thought it was so well done. It was very different from it was a 2012 movie, Blumhouse, Ethan Hawke, and Chris Young had scored that project, and he did again. He did an amazing job. These are not my reasons for wanting to do these. Isn't because anybody did the wrong thing. It's really because he did such amazing work. I'm like, I wish I had that. I wish I was going to do it. But another example.
Sure. I mean, you want to be around that creativity, yeah. all the time, just to, you know. Like I was just talking about with you sitting with Denis, like mm-hmm. that self-inspiration mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah, so I would say that as far as movies go, that would probably be one that came out that I was just so inspired by, which also inspired a lot of the sound design I did for my podcast, Rose Drive, you know, comes from projects like that, you know, just really mangling sounds and like, how do we get you to sit really uncomfortably in your own sweat, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, those are probably the ones that I mean. Besides that, I'm like everything I watch and I see, I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure they chose the right person for that. Like it's wonderful, and my ego is nowhere near of like, oh, I could have done it better. I'm like, no, I probably would have messed this up. So it's a good thing you went with somebody else. But I definitely have a couple of like those are probably the two that from the past that had come out and one that is coming out soon. I'm like, man, if I had my name on that, if I had a stamp, any sort of artistic influence on that. Mm-hmm. Oh, I would have been so, so excited for her. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're coming up on our time and everything here, but I just wanted to say thank you for coming on. This has been mm-hmm. awesome just to, you know, talk to some of the people that have had their fingerprints all over the series that we love. Yeah. So.
Thank you guys for having me, man. I'm glad yeah. I got to be here, and this is fun chat. You guys are really cool, and yeah, no, thank you. It's really fun to talk about this stuff. I can talk about this stuff forever. So,
yeah, of course. And all the stuff that you talked about that you want to share links with us, we'll make sure that we're sharing all that out as well.
Cool.
Before we go, though, is there anywhere that people can find you online if they want to, you know, follow you for various things?
Yeah, I'm a simple cat. You know, right now my main source of social media and any sort of way to contact me is through Instagram. You can find me at Rowdy Vega. It's the same name as my Blue Sky, I think. Rowdyvega. I know you have links for that. Yeah. And yeah, so I, you know, you can hit me up there. I post stuff what I do for Hans. We didn't get into it, but I do run a voiceover production house at a home, living in Los Angeles. So I actually put together customized demo reels for actors who want to get into animation, nice. Video game, commercial. So anybody that's listening, awesome. Hit me up on Instagram if you live in LA. So yeah, that's another kind of area that I like to jump into. But I post all kinds of stuff like that, mostly stuff related to my you know, to my workflow. But yeah, Instagram Rowdy Vega. That's probably all you're gonna need.
Alrighty, man. Well, I think that's gonna do for us here. As always. To our listeners, you can find us on Blue Sky. We are at the Dune Minute, or you can email duneminute@gmail.com. And we will be back later on this month with, I guess, our next episode of Summer School, getting back to our normal setup. But thanks for joining for this special episode, and we'll see you guys next time.
See y'all.